Welcome to Recurring Nightmares, Episode 9. I am Chris, as always, joined by Jeff.
Hello.
So, we are a little late again. We said we would be this month, though. With the holidays and everything, just took a little while to get this recording out. We've got a double feature of cold car movies.
Christmas movies again.
Yeah, the pair of Christmas movies, well, I guess around Christmas setting, at least. But before that, we're going to, I guess, recap our favorite five movies of the year. Not necessarily horror, just our favorite five movies in general.
I have plenty of horror in my top five. Horror was pretty strong last year. You know, all these delays and everything, there were still a lot of good horror movies. So.
Yeah, streaming is way more beneficial for horror, I think. It's just easier because they're lower budget films. They can, you know, drop them out on a service a whole lot easier than, say, Disney can with the next Marvel movie or whatever. So, you know, blockbuster movies we didn't have a ton of. There were a couple. But there weren't a ton, but horror was strong this year, I think.
You know, other than there was a few, like Candyman and Halloween Kills got pushed back. But for the most part, yeah, they went to streaming and there was some really good stuff, which we'll be discussing.
Yeah. So I guess I'll kick it off with my number five. We're gonna do a top five here. My number five is the sports drama with Ben Affleck, The Way Back. It's Ben Affleck's, I guess he was like a talented basketball player. Like that's the character. He was a talented basketball player. And he just leaves the game and he's coaxed back in to be a coach of this Catholic basketball team. He's got issues, like he's divorced from his wife. He's an alcoholic. It's kind of it's not really a sports story. It's not really a focus on the sports, although there's some basketball in there. But it's more about his struggle with, you know, addiction. And it's dealt with in a realistic way, I think. It's not the ending of that film is not... It's not like super downer, but you know, he doesn't win the big game. Which is like a lot of those games. Oh, like, you know, he's able to come back and they let him back in for one last time and he gets that thing. And like, no, like he gets fired from his job as the coach of this team, even though it was really helping him get back on track and it was something he really cared about. They treat it realistically.
Yeah, kind of a bummer of a movie. But I didn't give you what you expect, like you said, like what you want out of it. But, you know, I also appreciate that it didn't sugarcoat the issues that it was dealing with. It's kind of surprising for like, it was kind of a big release, you know, like big star in it. And, it didn't back down from its subject matter. If you want to see more traditional movie, though, from like that director who did that movie I love called Warrior. It's a more traditional sports movie that gives you the big
you know, finish at the end.
Yeah. But yeah, I liked The Way Back. It didn't make my top 10, so you won't hear about it in my top 5, but I did like it.
Nice. What do you have at number 5, Jeff?
My number 5 is Palm Springs, which is the Andy Samberg kind of Groundhog Day-ish movie with him and this girl caught in the same day over and over and over. I don't know, just really, it was a funny movie. It's kind of smart, elements of sci-fi in it. Just you've seen it?
No, I have not seen it, but everything you said is exactly what I've heard about it, so...
It's like both light and charming, but also like smart, clever, and just very enjoyable. It's one of those movies that I think will stand the test of time and get watched outside of 2020. So that's why it placed so high for me.
Nice. It's one that a lot of people seem pretty high on. I just have not gotten to it yet. But
I think you'll like it. It forced me to watch Groundhog Day for the first time. I was like, you know what? I should finally watch that. It was like a blind spot for me.
What did you think of Groundhog's Day?
I liked Palm Springs more. So
okay. All right.
Take that as you will.
Yeah, I'll be interested to see how I come out of that one. My number four is a film we reviewed here on the show, Relic. Three generations of women in this house, and we're kind of dealing with her end of life. You know, she's the grandmom, mom here has dementia. They're kind of dealing with her issues. And you think something weird's going on, but you can't really put your finger on it, and things go really fucking bonkers towards the end. And it has like a really touching ending, actually, allowing the three generations to kind of, meld together, and to see that, what's happening to the mom. And it's done in this kind of darks, like that her dementia is actually kind of like the supernatural thing, but it's going to happen to her mom and likely to the granddaughter as well. So you see that all there, and it's really neat. There's some subtle touches. I think you missed it the first time, like the door, and there's some neat things in it though, but I really ended up liking it a lot. So
yes, sad, creepy ending that'll kind of stick with you, I think. I liked Relic. My number four is a horror movie as well. It's Color Out of Space from director Richard Stanley, who like was run out of Hollywood in the 90s, and this is his first movie back. It's another kind of trippy Nick Cage horror movie. Not as weird as Mandy.
It's more traditional.
Yeah. But, trippy and kind of, I can't remember the horror author's name, but
it's a Lovecraftian.
Yeah,
it's
very Lovecraftian. Yeah, Lovecraftian. Got cool fucking colors in it. You got very, wild stuff that this color from space is doing to both humans and animals. Some cool creatures in this. Try not to spoil it too much. And God, like the stuff that happens to Nick Cage's family in this is brutal. And I don't know. I watched it when it first came out early last year, and then I watched it again in the fall and liked it just as much.
Some great body horror in that.
Yeah, yeah. And it just looks cool.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's enjoyable. It stuck with me. So it placed high.
Nice. My number three is a movie that just released. We got a pair of big Christmas releases. And mine is Disney's Pixar's Soul, which is, it's about this guy. It's a jazz movie, I guess, in some sense. He's a jazz musician, also a middle school teacher. He gets his big break to finally like be on stage with like a big name jazz musician, join this band and possibly go on tour, and he dies. And then it shifts to like this area in the afterlife where souls go before they get attached to a body. And he's trying to figure out a way to get back, and he's paired up with this other soul that just can't make up their mind what their passion is going to be in life. So it's very touching when they end up back down on Earth. There's a body swap kind of element to it, where the newborn soul is in the actual body of the jazz musician, and the jazz musician is in the body of a cat. The only people that can communicate are the two of them together. They're the only ones that know what's going on. I know that that has like rubbed some people the wrong way because it's another like, you know, black man has dropped in, been body swapped out of his body for a, in this case, I think it's Tina Fey that does the voice of the, the other soul. So that has rubbed some people the wrong way. But I think like if you like sit through the whole movie, it's like very touching. It's like heartwarming. It's wonderfully done. Great look at like jazz and musician and you know, just it's just a fun film. Like it's a little bit more heavy than a normal Pixar film, but I enjoyed it quite a bit.
I like heavy Pixar. I have not seen Soul yet. I stupidly canceled my Disney Plus right after Mandalorian was done. I want to see it. I've heard reactions all over the place, but you know, I've seen some very positive ones. I heard it has like a nice message about like kind of just enjoying life and stopping to smell the roses. I don't know. Like I said, I like heavy Pixar, so I'm excited to see it. I'm happy to hear it's good.
If you have, I mean, you have Xbox Live Gold and Game Pass. I would go, if you haven't used it, go to the perk section and redeem the, I think it's 3 months of Disney Plus.
That's how I saw The Mandalorian. Okay, I thought so it was only 30 days. I think it was only 30 days I got, and, I canceled right at the last second, like the day of,
before they charge.
Maybe there's another one though. I'll see. Or I could just, you know, pony up the $6 or $7 to watch the movie.
I mean, it'll still be there, you know, when you were something else on Disney Plus you want to watch.
So we got my number three is Possessor from Brandon Cronenberg. This was a late horror sci-fi movie, came out in like November, something like that. Yeah, this movie is pretty wild, pretty cool, like sci-fi idea about an assassin who, like she does her assignments by implanting herself in other people's brains and kind of using other people's bodies as like a puppet.
It's like the perfect Patsy movie, which mind you, this is also my number two, so we just get it all out right now.
Okay. She gets put into this guy and she's supposed to kill his father-in-law. And this is like a job that I think they say his stepson, like this guy's stepson hired them to do, basically to kill like off his whole family so he can inherit his dad's money. Stepson, I don't think you ever even see in the movie, but he's the person that hires them. Anyways, not to get too lost in the details of the plot, but it's like a cool sci-fi idea. And in a movie with some awesome, like, graphic violence. I actually just rewatched it. Really good. Like, I'm kind of surprised that Brandon Cronenberg, I don't know, is as good as he is. It feels a lot like something his dad would have made.
Very much so.
But, you know, this guy's obviously got the chops, and he has like an original cool sci-fi story here with strong horror elements. It is like rewatching it, I'm like, I don't know how many times I'm going to rewatch this movie because it's kind of joyless and just kind of oppressive, but so many cool things in it, like that it's definitely like if you're a fan of the genre, if you're a fan of sci-fi or horror, it's something you should definitely watch at least once. Definitely one of the more original entries in those genres from last year.
Yeah, and it's I love like when people try to do things with sci-fi. Like a lot of times, space. Like not everything in science fiction needs to be space. Like you can do other things with it, and this is a cool idea. Like where, you know, basically like some sort of mind jack type thing where. Taking over another and how like that may like how it kind of explores the effects of like what a technology that might be do, like where it could kind of blend your realities and you know, you're there to kill that other person, but it could be fucking up your brain as well. And
yeah,
really, really fascinating.
One of my favorite moments in the movie is early on, our assassin, she like gets a couple of days off, so she gets to go back home to her family. And like she's at the end of like the street going towards her house, and before she goes in to like greet her family, she has to like rehearse just how she would talk to them because she doesn't really remember anymore. Like, cool. Like, it's cool. Like, this is an awesome like sci-fi idea. It's like you don't need a huge budget to do any of this. Like, he's doing it on a relatively small budget, but there's tons of big ideas in it.
Yep, it's really cool. What is your number two, Jeff?
So yeah, we kind of, that was your number two, right? So, yep. My number two, really surprising one for me, another, kind of low budget. This is an indie film from relative newcomer Jim Cummings. It's called The Wolf of Snow Hollow. It's only his second movie. You know, his first movie was like him breaking into the industry, got him some notice, and then this is his follow-up. And he plays an alcoholic cop in this who is like trying to keep it together as his small town is being like terrorized by this werewolf. And I don't know, I just think it's a hard thing to pull off horror comedy. And this movie, I think, does the balancing act pretty damn well. I find Jim Cummings kind of fascinating as like an actor, like this weird kind of manic energy he has in this and the way he could just kind of explode. But, you know, also has some pretty sincere moments. You know, a lot. And besides the horror and the comedy, I think that the, you know, all that stuff is kind of a backdrop to like some of the family drama stuff that's going on between him and his dad and him and his daughter. I don't know. I was really surprised by this movie. I thought it had a cool twist at the end. There's a bit of a problem with the twist in that.
I did like the absurdity of it. I did not like the film as much as you did, but the absurdity of how the film ends is, like the big reveal, at least.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's like, I like the twist, but also it's, I mean, without totally spoiling everything, it's like, you can't see it coming because it's like who the bad guy is not in the movie like before then. So it's like, okay, this guy that just showed up is the guy. Spoilers. But I liked like what the twist was with him, and I liked how it ended. Like, I liked how things resolved, I guess. Yeah, I really liked it. It grew on me quite a bit after watching it. The more I thought about it, I'm really interested to see what Jim Cummings does next. And it just kind of crept up my list after I watched it.
Nice. I'm glad you enjoyed it. My number one is a film I think you just started watching tonight.
Yes.
Tenet by Christopher Nolan. You know, we just talked about Possessor a little bit ago, like heady sci-fi, you know, kind of trying new things. This is like a new spin on time travel and, the mechanics of it and how things would do that, but all with like the Christopher Nolan flair.
Yeah, this is not small budget sci-fi. This is
big budget sci-fi. And I would say I'm glad that I watched it in the way I did, which was at home on my couch with subtitles on, because I think the film actually has some technical issues with it where I think the sound mix is way too high. Like the soundtrack kind of overpowers it in some spots. And you can miss some dialogue, which is, I think, very important. This is not a film you can like kind of half-ass watch, like you can with some big budget films. Like, you kind of need to pay attention to understand like the mechanics of it. Like, they're explained. Like, I think I figured it out pretty much on the first go. But you know, if you miss some things, I think you could be like, "What the fuck is going on here?" And I kind of like that about it too. Like, where it's like, hey, we went for something and it's crazy. And I enjoyed the entirety of it. Like it's a long film. I was on board pretty much from the start, and I did not know how to react to, I was going to react to this because, it received pretty good reviews, but also there were a lot of people going like, I don't know, this might be the one where he jumps the shark. Like I'm on board. Like this is classic, Nolan sci-fi. It's up there with, Inception and The Prestige and Interstellar for me. So
I can't judge one way or another, because I'm, like I said, I'm only about an hour into it. I'm enjoying it so far, but like I told you, it's like, it's kind of, I'm just kind of going with the ride at this point. I mean, there's a great line they say early on. They're like, don't think about it, just feel it. I'm like, okay, are you speaking to me? Because I guess that's what I'm going to have to do here. I mean, in a way, I
think so. I think some people took that as like, you know, if you're telling people not to think about it, like, then maybe you shouldn't even have tried this. No, like, it's still a fun ride. Like, even if you like aren't getting the mechanics of the time travel. And I think as you watch it, you will catch on to like how things kind of work, because they'll show you the mechanics of it.
When you're dealing, it's just one of those things, like as you're watching it, it's like twisting your brain watching it.
Yeah.
You know, like it's like, okay, yeah. Okay. What, you know, and then like, I just kind of,
so it's like a time paradox, like inside a time paradox. It's like it's constantly twisting and turning, and
it's hard to even wrap your mind around its like main conceit, is that these materials that are inverted and they're entropying and reverse, I don't know what the fuck, and you're just like, it's just, even watching it visually, you're like, okay, things are going backwards, but like, what the fuck? But anyway, so my gist of the story so far is basically he's like this fucking secret agent guy, and he's tasked with like saving the world, essentially, like stopping a world war. And he's investigating, you know, in order to do so, he's like investigating these materials that they're finding that apparently have traveled backwards in time.
Yeah.
And that's kind of where I'm at. Like, there was just a big action scene that was in reverse. So I guess I'll just leave it at that. I'm enjoying it. It's just like, I could see how people
found it
challenging. Yeah,
for sure. It's and I could see where people are like, nope, I'm not on board with this at all. Like It hits the right notes for me, so I was pleasantly surprised, and it hits the top spot for me.
Yeah, I'm not, like I said, I'm enjoying it. I'm not saying it's not for me at all. I don't know if I'll land like you did on it. Like I said, maybe we'll touch on it in our next episode, like my full reaction. But anyways, my number one is not hard to wrap your mind around. It's very simple. My number one movie for 2020 is David Byrne's American Utopia, directed by Spike Lee. This is a concert film. And I don't know, one of the things, you know, as 2020 went on, I started to miss things. Missed going to the theater and seeing movies.
Yeah.
Something else I really enjoy and missed was getting to go see a live show in a theater. And this provided that opportunity. It's basically just David Byrne from the Talking Heads, and it's his Broadway show called American Utopia. A mix of like old Talking Head songs and new songs. I don't think you need to be a fan of the Talking Heads to enjoy this. And in fact, like, I actually liked some of the newer songs more than the old ones. But what it really boils down to is just like wonderfully shot and directed by Spike Lee. And the movie is just kind of pure joy. It's kind of like a balm, which is something I think that fit the bill for last year. a movie that makes you just feel pure joy. You know, easily shot it up the list for me. Maybe kind of an unconventional top choice, but I really, really love that movie. And if you're, if you want to watch something that will put you in a good mood, I guarantee you, like I said, you don't have to be a fan of David Byrne or the Talking Heads. This is just a fun live show shot really well, and it will put you in a good mood. It'll give you a little bit of hope for humanity, too, by the end of it.
Just something we all might need.
So that's why I like ended up at the top for me. It's just like I know I'm going to watch it a bunch of times. Like I've watched, I think we talked about this before, but the last like concert film I really, really enjoyed was Taylor Swift, Reputation. This doesn't have all the pyrotechnics of any or anything like that. It's like just a Broadway show, but again, it's just really well done. Great songs, great messages, some cool like you know, speeches from him between the songs. It's just, I don't know, hard to describe, but like I said, if you want something to put you in a good mood, you can't go wrong with American Utopia. It's on HBO Max.
Nice. Well, that brings us to our big head-to-head matchup. A pair of, as I said at the top of this, kind of chilling car rides, Christmas car rides too, I guess, is just that.
You before we get into it, like you had not seen either of these movies, no, right?
Did not see either one.
Really good job picking two movies that thematically are very like it's almost the same premise in each one. But go ahead.
Yeah, we will get to that. So Dead Ends is from 2003 and Windchill from 2007. I guess we'll do these chronologically because I think that's also how we watch them. So
yeah, I did. Just randomly. Yeah, that's how I did it.
Least bit freaked out that we are the only car on the road right now.
It's 7:30 already, darling.
Yes, I'm aware of that, Laura. I thought we'd come to a junction by now.
Stop!
I saw a woman in the forest.
Cool, that's tripping out.
Oh my God!
What the hell was that?
Dead End, 2003, directed by Jean-Baptiste Andrea and Fabrice Canepa. Starring Ray Wise, Lin Shaye. It's not a very big cast. It kind of all takes place in a car, so it's a family car ride. I think there's like six people at the outset. There's a couple other people that'll show up over the course of it. And lost some information here. I had about $1 million budget. I don't even think it released like in theaters here.
Shocker.
Yeah, it was, I think it was straight to DVD here in the US. So no box office take for it. Pretty simple premise, right? Like it's a family out on a Christmas Eve. They're driving to, I guess, the guy's in-law's house, and they're going to celebrate Christmas Eve there with their family. And they had cars filled with presents, and starts out innocently enough where, you know, that's just these, they're just in the car.
It starts, one of my very first note was odd opening in the car. It feels like you're just entering in the middle of a scene. It's just like all, it just like, bam, it opens and it's a family talking in a car. But it like literally feels like you're mid, like did I miss the scene before this?
No, you didn't. Like, and it's weird because like it's kind of starts off with this overly jokey tone. Like,
dude, this is going to be a big problem going for, yes, that. This tone in this movie, it's all over the place, but like the jokey tone, I think drags it down a lot for me.
So yeah, like it kicks off very jokey from the beginning. And then it has like this weird punk opening. Like the music is just like this kind of like 90s ish pop music, like pop punk music. It's I kind of dug that. Like it went like zero sense, like zero continuity with like the opening of this film to that. But I was like, yeah, it's like that's kind of the note I have here. The acting is not great.
Dude,
that's my next note. Pretty awful.
Ray Wise, who plays the dad, is carrying this fucking movie on his back because no one else is up to the task here. Like Lin Shaye is awful in it, I think, which is weird because
we'll get to it. We'll get to her. But the next thing I have is like I don't hate kind of this like sarcastic tone and dialogue that it starts out with. Like, I don't think this movie would be made today at all. Like, but I did think it was pretty accurate for like how dumb like 90s white kids kind of
the homo jokes in the backseat.
Yeah,
I have that note about that.
Yeah, like that. But like, yes, like it's horrible. It's a horrible joke, but also. I'm pretty sure that like I made shitty jokes like that when I was like
it really
15, 17.
It really like lets you know that the era that it came out in it was like the height, like early 2000s was like the height of that like no homo shit, like, and yeah, they're in the backseat and giving each other like the one kid is giving the other kid shit about how he's gay.
Yeah,
that's not why I don't like this movie. It's just
But this is every long car ride I ever took with my in-laws. from the mom like wanting to sing Christmas songs and like the dad just being like, what the fuck is going on, to like the, it's everything about it just reminded me of like family, like a family trip that I would take with my in-laws, like when I was dating my wife.
That's what they're going for. It's like the dysfunctional family on the road type thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but it's just, I mean, maybe as we get into the plot more, I'll get into other things. Like, I just think that could have worked, and you could have done a movie that was actually scary at the same time, as opposed to, and like, I'm not like opposed to the plot that happens here, really. It's just, well, there's things about it I really hate, but like, it's just, again, we've already touched on it, but it's like, it doesn't know, like, when you do the horror shit, like, you should try to make that stuff kind of scary and not play everything as a fucking joke. Like, I don't know. Like, it kept rubbing me the wrong way. Like,
so,
there's, not to get ahead of ourselves too much, but like, there's a part where, like, people start dying and the mom's traumatized by it. And it's like, they play that as it's like, it's super funny that she's traumatized. And I'm just like,
I don't know if it shouldn't be super funny, but I actually found like when she goes off the deep end later in the film, like, I love that. Like I was laughing the entire fucking time. Like she's gone batshit insane. She's like eating a fucking pie. Just like,
no, I was so annoyed. I was so like turned off by, because I'm just like, why are you even making this movie? Like, if you think this shit's funny, I don't know. I pictured a movie where it's like the same plot, but like actually tries to creep you out a little bit sometimes. Like,
yeah, this does not try to creep you out at all. Like it's I think like we said it early on, like it has a weird tone. And there's weird tonal shifts throughout the whole thing.
Yes.
So it's not consistent. I do fully agree with that. Like, I just like, look, we will get, I don't think this is a good movie, but okay. I kind of went along with like, yeah, I'm having fun with like the stupidity of some of this shit. But yeah, so like they're on this car trip. Everything kind of seems normal. They've kind of taken a detour, I guess, like off on this road. And they've been driving down it a while.
The dad takes like a back road or something
because
he's bored and he wanted to keep himself awake, which was so weird because it's like, this is kind of what happens in the other movie too. But he thought it would keep him awake. And I guess like he like falls asleep and they almost get into an accident, right? That's where we get like kind of our exciting incident of the movie, right? Like there's they find this weird
he dozes off and then the daughter they all fall asleep, so they're all sleeping, the car's moving along. The daughter wakes up and is able like she's like dad like as like a car's coming, they swerve and they kind of go off the road a little bit. The other car's nowhere to be seen though. So there was no damage to the car. They kind of get moving again. And as they kind of move on, they end up finding this lady who's carrying a baby. She seems traumatized. She's bleeding from the head. And they're like, all right, we got to help this lady. But there's no fucking room here because they have all these presents in the car. So this is the note though I have here is like, so they leave the daughter. She's like I'll walk. Like,
yeah,
she's like, I'll walk. Like, so you don't even know how far you gotta walk.
I know. But, and so you could pick up this lady who will not even speak to you. Are the alarms not going off? Like, hey, this seems like a creepy ghost girl. Like, maybe we shouldn't kick our daughter out of the fucking car.
Like, who leaves their daughter on the side of the road like that? they just drive off.
So weird. That scene is so. I think they do kind of because weren't they like? They're like, oh, we'll backtrack to some little fucking cabin we just passed. Isn't that what they do? So like, maybe she knew how far she had to walk, but like,
yeah, I might have missed them saying that. I just like, oh, like I think he was like, oh, I think I saw something up there. And maybe that's what it is. Maybe she's like, I don't have to walk that far. And the reason she wants some time so that she can establish that, you know, she wants to break up with her boyfriend.
She like rehearses breaking up with him or something, right?
Which is funny because like she also reveals shortly thereafter that she's pregnant with this dude's baby. So I don't know. That was a little weird. But I mean, that after some shit goes south. The next one I have here is this shit is weird. I mean, I think it's supposed to be weird, but still, it's really weird.
How about so? Like, I think they go back to this cabin to like
look yeah.
for help for this girl. The son gets out of the car and he goes to jack off in the woods. Like, he fucking goes into the woods, takes a pinup girl, pins her to a tree, and starts jacking off to her. And that's like. Honestly, I'm not like a prude or anything, but that's when the movie like really started to lose me. I'm like, that's just doesn't make who would do that? Like, it makes no fucking sense, and it's not like I thought it was not funny. Like, it's just like
no, like I was like, this is fucking weird. Like, all right, like I get it. Like, you're I guess like we're going with the
all teenagers. He needs to jerk off.
Like, not like, hey, we just picked up this weird chick, and her baby. I need to go jerk off in the woods. I don't know. Teenagers are weird, but I've never done that. So, that was really kind of strange.
Doesn't he get killed off while he's out here in the woods too?
No. So he lives for a little bit longer. Okay. So he's off jerking off. The daughter's walking. They're still walking towards the car. The mom and dad go into this cabin, and so leaving the boyfriend and the weird, creepy ghost lady and her baby in the car. And then you just kind of hear like a scream, and you see that he's been thrust into the back of this hearse and taken away. So then it's like, we got to chase after him, but they do. And they find him on the side of the road, like mutilated, which I don't know. I got a laugh out of the whole fucking, like, we got to get his cell phone has his earring attached to it. And that whole piece was ridiculous. But yeah, so that's when the deaths start happening is that like, so it seems to be that this lady here, she is like some sort of Grim Reaper, and she's going to start offing them one by one. So she offs the boyfriend first, and then next up is the son, who she ends up making out with in the woods. But before that, like, they reprise Jingle Bells. Like, the daughter is, like, in shock back in the car, and she just starts singing Jingle Bells. But I was like, I mean, it's a nice callback to earlier in the film where the mom was like, we all should sing a song. And, like, I thought that was, like, a nice touch, because, like, it's this, like, demented version, because she is, like, fucked up. She just saw her, you know, her boyfriend, the father of her unborn baby, mutilated on the side of the road. I don't think they took the body. I think they might have left it there.
I don't know. They do say something at one point about, like, a body in the back.
That's the son. Like, they put the son in the body because the mom won't leave him behind. I don't know why they stop again, but they do. And
so someone else could die, I guess. You know,
yeah, I guess, like, that's the only reason. And for whatever reason, and, you know, we've just had somebody get kidnapped, and this dude, this idiot teenager, wanders off into the woods again on his own, and this time the ghost lady shows up and starts, like, making out with him, but then bites his fucking lip off. Like, it's actually pretty gross. Like,
it's actually one of the few things in the movie I was like, oh, that wasn't bad.
Yeah,
that was all right.
he's dead. Like, he gets kidnapped and murdered. Then the fucking daughter just kind of, like, drops that she's pregnant. It's like, out of nowhere. Like, it was, I don't know. They throw the body of the son in the trunk. But the mom has kind of lost it at this point. Like, she's just, like, eating a pie in the back seat.
She starts, like, stress eating, like, shoving a fucking pie down her throat.
She draws
all, like, played, like, it's so, like it's totally played for laughs. Like, it's all goofy. Like,
I mean, it got a laugh out of me, because, like, my notes here are, she's eating the pie, lol. What the fuck? The whole thing is bonkers. Then she draws the boyfriend. She's like, it's, I don't remember the dude's name, but she's like, look, it's him. He's, like, fucking decapitated. Yeah. Bloody. Like, she's just totally, you know, she's totally lost her mind. And then, you know, they're not really paying attention to the woman who was having a nervous breakdown. And she ends up picking up the shotgun that they had in the car that they were going to give to her brother. And she shoots the dad in the leg.
Yeah.
I could see where you're again, this got a laugh out of me too, but he's like yelling, like, holy shit, bitch just shot me in the leg. And then she's like, she wanders over, she's like, is he gonna die too?
If it got a laugh out of me at any point, it was one of those, like, what the fuck am I watching laughs? Like, what is this? Like, what are we doing here?
Does she give herself an orgasm by rubbing her brain?
All right, let me pull up my note here. What does it say? Mom with her brain hanging out, she massages it and sounds like she's coming? Question mark?
I mean, that's kind of what I ask as well.
Like, I think she's by touching her brain, she was, like, touching a pleasure center in her brain, and it made her come. But again, okay. It's
a little bonkers.
What are we doing? What are we doing? What on earth are we doing here? She falls over. This is, like, the mom dies here, right? Like, yeah.
Yeah, she's dead at that point.
Before she dies, she falls, and she says something about how she made the cheerleading squad, and it's the happiest day of her life. So I guess, like, she, you know, was just reliving some moment when she was a teenager in her head. It's so tonally fucking weird. And it's weird how, like, as each person dies in this movie, the family just kind of keeps going along. Like, I guess, she does freak out, but it's like every time they're back in the car, like, I don't know, they don't seem as upset as you would be if, like, this was happening to you, I guess. Like, I don't know, like...
I forgot, there's a whole, like, subplot, too, where the mom reveals, like, after the son dies, the mom reveals that Ray Wise isn't the son's dad. Like that it's somebody else, and like so that's like a whole subplot that goes on, and it dragged out maybe a little bit too long. It's like just tonally weird though, like where like we're gonna drop like family secrets on people in the middle of these traumatic events. And I want to know why Ray Wise is like sweating so much throughout the whole movie.
He needs a drink or something. I don't know. He needs a cigarette. There is a good part where he like, I think he's like smoking a cigarette and he's like, I don't know, maybe this, maybe that, maybe the moon's made out of cheese. Who the fuck knows? Like, like he's good in it. Like it's, the movie is like poorly directed. And so like, you have people who are like veteran character actors, like Lin Shaye, I think giving pretty bad performances, but Ray Wise like fucking keeps it together as best as he can in it for me. Like he is like one of the few highlights. There's like another part where he screams like, I don't want to calm down. I want this shit to stop. like his reactions are like the closest to, I don't know how I feel like a normal person would react in this situation. And also like to me, the funniest was him. Like when he would shout shit like that.
He has maybe the best lines in the movie.
Also weird thing for me, like before we're going to get to like probably the ending here of the plot, but like one general thing about the movie that like really bugged me is like, it's like this movie about this family, going to Christmas Eve basically. Right. But like this, other than like the song that they sing, it's like, you would never guess that this is a Christmas horror film or like a winter horror film. Like it doesn't look cold.
Yeah. There's no snow on the ground.
There's leaves on all the trees. Like it looks like it is in the middle of summer. Like it's fucking July.
There are Christmas presents.
Set decorations.
That's like where the so the back of the car is filled with these Christmas presents, and that's where they get the shotgun from, because the in-law, the brother of Lin Shaye, is like some gun nut, and Ray Wise goes off on like he's like a fucking gun freak and basically wants to fuck his guns and shit. it's a good little rant that he has there.
Yeah, like I like that. Like again, I'm not totally against the thing that this thing's going for, which is like the bickering family on a road trip thing. Like I just feel like it was so poorly made. Like
it never turns the serious note, right? Like so, it's like always kind of a little overly jokey. Or as you said, like at some point you start to realize that like shit's gone really south. and maybe the issue is that the only one that realizes that shit's gone really south is Ray Wise, because the daughter, she kind of goes into shock after the boyfriend dies, and then the mom goes into shock after the son dies.
Yeah.
So there is nobody that's like fully sane. Throughout them. And the kid's just a dickhead, like so. But it's kind of, it is like tonally inconsistent with, you know, how you would think it should act. One of the things I did think, like, so like I, you know, hearing the shitty jokes in the beginning from the kid, I was like, it kind of feels like a mid like 95, 96 film. And then there's like this weird line about like he wants to buy like an Atari. And she's like, well, you want to get the PlayStation. That's the cool thing. Like this is 2003. Yeah. It would be like the PlayStation 2 and Atari's dead at this point. What kind of line is that? Like did this guy write it in like 1995 and it just got made in 2003? Or
I just wrote it off as the writer was dealing with a topic they didn't really know really that well. Yeah.
But yeah, so then it all kind of like wraps up in the end. There's another car crash, I believe, and she wakes up in the hospital. The daughter does, and we find out everybody else has died, and she's been in a coma for a couple days, I believe, and everything that she's kind of heard has just been like what she's heard, or I guess it's like residual memories of things from her family, and then like the doctor's name is like where they were driving to all this time.
Yeah, they're trying, like in the, like earlier in the movie, they're trying to reach this place called Marcot for whatever fucking reason, and then you find out, oh, that's doctor's name, so she like heard that.
And then you see like the very end is the car that like rescued her, that you know was involved in the accident but was able to rescue her, was like that black hearse type thing.
This is my most hated ending in a movie ever. Like the fucking "it was all a dream."
Yeah, I saw that and I was like, I can see why Jeff fucking.
Yeah,
I mean, outside of other things, it's like I can see why Jeff fucking hated it, because it's basically a 90-minute or like 83-minute waste of time, because, or you know, yeah. Whatever. Like whenever the accident happens is when reality stopped. Everything else that happens is non-existent.
It's the very beginning of the movie when they get in that accident. Everything after it is a dream, and it's like it was all just a dream ending, because I'm like, why the fuck did we just watch this then? We're watching some person's dream. Who gives a shit? Like, none of it was fucking. I hate it, dude. I hate it so much.
I get that.
And you find out that the woman and the baby that they picked up. You know, it was the woman and the baby in the other car that they hit, and they had died also.
Yes.
Right. Some fucking weird guy found them.
For some reason, he drives a fucking hearse.
Yeah, and then she gets a ride from him.
Yeah, the doctor does. It's weird.
Leaving the hospital. Yeah, like I could see people be like, "Oh, cool twist." No, I hate it was all just a dream, and I hate like whatever the fuck they're trying to do with the hearse there at the end. Like, I just,
I'm with you there. Like that real, like
I was already off. Like I already got an app of this movie.
Right. Yeah. you were off pretty early. Like I was with it for most of it, and then that happened. And I was like, this kind of sucks. Like,
yeah, it's
like it means everything I just watched was fake. Like, yeah. There's no consequence to it. It's there. Like, I don't care that there's not a crazy killer out there, but like, what was the purpose of all this? Because she's not coming to grips with anything, right? She's just, it's all just residual that she's hearing. Like, it's not like, all right, we went on this mind fuck journey to come up with some greater answer.
Yeah, it's yeah, agreed.
So that's Dead End. I guess let's give some ratings here, Jeff. Where are you at on Dead End?
Look, man, I've grown a strong appreciation for low budget B movies over the years, but this just didn't work for me. I thought that it was very poorly directed, bad performances, no Christmas or winter flavor to it. And then it looks cheap as shit. Fucking, I hated the twist ending, the whole, it was just all just a dream shit. It just was like, what was the point of seeing all this? You know, very few highlights at all. Like, I thought Ray Weiss was good. I thought the part where the kid gets his fucking lip bit off was okay. But boy, oh boy, I will never be seeing Dead End again. I'm going to give it a 3 out of 10.
I am not coming down quite as harsh on it as that. But I totally agree with you on the ending, though. It was just like, this is a waste, right? Like, there was, you just watched. And there's a way to make that work here. I enjoyed the stupidity of the scenes. That pushes it up a little bit for me. I'm going to give it a 5.
We had a class together, you know? Intro to Modern Philosophy?
God, there's like a million people in that class. It's like Woodstock.
So, are you doing anything over the break?
Ugh. I'm getting that laser eye surgery.
But your glasses look so good on you.
How would you know? I never wear them outside my dorm.
The National Weather Service has issued a winter storm warning for the entire eastern seaboard. Temperatures will plunge with a wind chill reaching 30 degrees below zero.
What the hell is this? Are we lost or something?
It's a shortcut.
Get back
calm
on the highway.
Down, relax.
Pull over.
Hey, you want me to pull over? There's no
slow down.
Hello?
Any luck?
I can't get a signal.
What's wrong with you? What did I do?
You drove us here!
You think I intentionally arranged for us to get stranded? What kind of a psycho do you think I am?
Hello? We just had an accident. We could really use some help here. What the hell?
Hey.
So, that brings us to its counterpart here in this episode, Windchill from 2007, directed by Gregory Jacobs, starring Emily Blunt and Ashton Holmes. Emily Blunt, pretty big name now.
Yeah.
It had a budget of $6 million, and it pulled in a total gross in the U.S. of $36,800.
Whoa.
Worldwide gross of $285,000. So it did not make its money back. Notable executive producers on this, George Clooney and Steven Soderbergh.
Yeah, I saw that. And then I don't know what happened where the release got fucked up and it made $0.
Yeah, I mean, they're pretty high profile that they touched this film in some way.
They believed in it. They believed it could be something.
And then for it not to kind of make any money.
I mean, that's crazy. Like, I'm
not sure what happened there. But anyway, another film takes place in a car. About a car trip during Christmas gone bad. Emily Blunt is a college student, and she, I guess she's on her way home to Delaware, which is her first mistake. She's going to Delaware. She needs a ride home. She's going to take the bus. And I guess somebody who she's texting with tells her, like, hey, why don't you check the ride board? Which she does and finds a ride to Delaware with. And, goes, meets up with this guy and kind of gets moving. I don't know. I kind of hate Emily Blunt's character, who's named Girl right from the start. Like, I kind of don't like her. I come around on her over the course of this film, but I don't like her right from the beginning because she's kind of like a super bitch.
Okay. I'm like so conflicted because I think Emily Blunt is very cute in this. Like, I like her look. Like, I'm like, oh, Emily Blunt is a college student. Especially when she puts her glasses on, like the one guy says, like the guy she's riding with says.
Yeah.
But one of my notes early on, as I'm like, they seem pretty rude to each other, especially for not knowing each other.
Yeah.
And addition to that, like, she is like really bitchy to him for no reason.
So like, we got the same vibe here. Cause
I thought she was really bitchy. Like, she's like super rude. Like, they're both kind of sniping at each other, but she's like super rude to this guy who she asked him for a ride. Like, right. You know,
it's a really weird dynamic.
It's like, it would almost make sense if they knew each other beforehand. Then I could see it's like, you're so familiar with each other. They give each other shit all the time, but it comes off weird as two strangers, like how bitchy she is to him. You know what I mean? Like, I was just like, what the fuck? So yeah, I noticed that as well.
Okay. Yeah. It's like, it's a weird dynamic. Like, they're not really like getting along, which is fine. Like, you don't have to get along with someone, but like, you would think that he's doing her a favor, taking her home.
I mean, this is early on before, you know, I mean, there's, I
yeah, think, it's like there, and there's a point where I turn on him.
yeah. And we'll get to it. I guess we're a little bit before that, I guess before you go further in the plot, I'm going to say, like, when I started this, I thought immediately, I'm like, this is better than Dead End because one, Emily Blunt, and two, it looks like a real movie. Also, looks like Christmas time in the movie. Like
it's winter.
It nails basics.
It is winter time in the Poconos, which seems like they're. I don't know where she's coming from. Like what school she's at. I don't know if they have that in the name. But which I thought was weird. Like they're like, oh, we have five hours to go, and they're going to Delaware. I'm like, well, the only place that has like. That would have snow at that point in time would be north. So she's either coming from New York or Western Pennsylvania. I spent a lot of the time watching this movie trying to figure out where the fuck they were. and I ultimately came down with, I knew exactly where they were, and none of this is realistic to me at all. So.
It's totally right over my head, all of it. I was just like, whatever.
Yeah. We'll cut back to my problems there, and it's a problem I have with films that are filmed in places you know that don't abide by the rules of that. But we'll come back to that. So they're in the car. She's kind of bitchy. She has to pee and asks to stop at a gas station. And he like carries her into the gas station, which is also a diner for some reason. I found that whole thing weird. Like she gets locked in the bathroom and mm-hmm. they can't hear her. It's like, so I'm thinking like something supernatural is happening, right? Like she's having some sort of mental break. I don't think that really ties into anything ultimately.
I think it's probably your first clue that it's going in a supernatural direction. I
mean, yeah, for that, sure. Yeah.
You know, I don't know.
So, this is where I start kind of like, I really started digging into where the fuck they were because then it's like, where in PA are they? Wait, never mind. I know exactly where they should be because the highway they're on is, which was 476. You see signs for that multiple times. It's a part of the Pennsylvania Turnpike, which is called the Northeast Extension. There is no 606 South that you can just drive off of. Like every exit on 476 is a toll road. So they couldn't just like drive off the highway. So it just like started bothering me right there. It's like that gas station wouldn't exist on 476 because the only stops on the turnpike are like actual rest stops, like truck stops.
This is like me playing Watch Dogs, where I was just
started to bother me. It's like stupid shit that I wouldn't notice if it didn't happen to be like this is where
not your backyard.
Yeah, because like they're taught like so you know they pull off onto the 606 South Road, you know, you hear on the radio it's going to get to be like 30 degrees below zero. She starts questioning like. She thinks something's up at this point, I think. So she starts questioning him and like asking him like, oh, like, you know, which part of the beach did you go to? Or like she gives two names for basically what's the same thing. And he like doesn't know how to answer it. So she like, you're lying to me. And like, what the fuck are you doing now? You're like taking me down like rape alley or something. She starts panicking, which rightly so, because now this dude is really creepy. He's been lying to her, got her into the car, was like talking to the gas station attendant, didn't seem to know where he was going. And so they're getting into a fight, and then another car kind of comes along and runs them off the road. And they go into a snowbank, and I think they both black out, right? They both.
Yeah, they like wake up. After it, yeah. Who knows how long, minutes, whatever.
And then the dude kind of reveals how creepy he really is. Like, he's planned this whole thing. Like,
yeah. So the deal was he is in love with her. Like, he's got a crush on her. He's got classes with her. In fact, he was sitting behind her in class when she got the text about using a rideshare.
Yeah. So
he put his fucking thing up on the community board. you know, need a ride to Delaware or whatever. And so, like, it was all ploy by him to get 6 hours alone in a car with her. In fact, he doesn't even live in the direction she's going. He lives near campus.
Right.
So it's just, like, a way, like, he, you know, in his mind, he's, like, this shy, dorky person who doesn't know how to ask a girl out. And
so he kidnaps one.
Yeah. Well, under false pretenses. And he even says to her, like, I thought it would be like a funny story. Like if we fell in love, like years later, we would laugh about how we met and blah, blah, blah. And honestly, like up until like all the way up until this point, I'm like pretty into this movie. And I thought like that twist was good. I liked it. And I was like, but like ultimately I'm like, this was more interesting than where the movie goes. Like I think it went this like crazy thriller direction with these two characters trapped in a car together in the middle of the woods. And it's just, and you know, there's elements of that throughout, but like kind of here is where like the more supernatural stuff starts. And it, that stuff I think is like super half baked. Like, it's just like, what
are we doing? It's like, I don't have a whole lot of notes after they crash. So like scenic route 606 that he takes her on is like, seems like it's highway death. Like there's like ghosts and shit out in the woods. Like she can't talk to people. Like she's like trying to talk to them. They're just walking away and then they're not there anymore. And this is where I start to get a funny feeling. Cause we just watched, you know, Dead End where they were dead. Most of them. And I'm like, they're dead, aren't they? Like, this is another film where they're all fucking dead. Like, there's visions, there's flashbacks, there's just general weirdness throughout the whole thing. We start to kind of piece together something where there's this cop that patrols this road. And through these flashbacks, we see that maybe he was, like, kidnapping people and murdering them or raping them.
Yeah, and it's just like so poorly explained. I thought one, it's pretty late in the movie. It's like 40 minutes in, you introduce the supernatural element, and it's just that's what you get out of it. There was a cop, he killed people, I guess, did bad things, people disappear along this stretch, right?
Yeah, and then like the priest like found him, but then they like killed him or like left him to die.
By the way, as it gets dark, were you watching this on Crackle?
Yes.
Did you have problems with like the color grading? Or
yes. Something? So like it would fluctuate. All it would go. It would like lighten up, and it would get dark, and then it would brighten. It was like, So I thought it was my monitor at first, and I was like, all right, I'll flip it to another screen.
I thought maybe it was me, and it still did.
I think it's just a bad. Like it's a bad cut of this film.
Yeah.
Like,
so if you want to see this movie, I would say pay the rental. Maybe hopefully it's better on Amazon or something, because like the Crackle version, it looks like a light's flicking on and off for like the second half of the movie. Like I don't understand what happened there.
Really, really ugly transfer.
I mean, it is Crackle, so I'm guessing low standards, low quality control going on.
It's a free way of watching the film.
Because, like, I thought it was a pretty good-looking movie, and then, like, once it got dark, it was just like, what the fuck is going on here? This is such a bad version of this. It's got to look... I don't think... There's got to be a version of this movie that does not do that. So. It wasn't just me.
No, it wasn't. So, as we said, though, it's like, you know, this is not... They're not dead, but this road here is a haunted road, and that's the big deal, right? It's like there's a ghost cop that takes people that go down this road. I wish that they had kind of gone like a different way with it, not have the supernatural, and actually gone with like what caused me to pick these films in the first place is that like because this really nails on it. They get stranded in a fucking blizzard.
Right? The situation in the car. The situation is scary enough and it's filled with enough drama. Okay, here's this creepy guy I'm stuck with. Like, do they get along? Do they try to fight each other? Like, and you have the elements battling against you. Like that, those two things enough. Like I think you could have done a good, really good movie with.
Yeah.
And then they introduced this supernatural element, and I think that like it's not developed well enough. Like it's just like, okay, there was a cop, he killed people. Like what the fuck is this now?
Yeah, we don't need it.
I mean, another good thing, there's like a ticking clock here because once they got in the accident and they like drove off the road or whatever, like the guy who's driving has like some serious internal injury and he's peeing blood. Like, you know what I mean? Like there's like so many elements that are good, I think, here. And it's like, right. I don't need that cop that
and
shows
they,
up.
They touch on parts of it too. Like, so she goes at one point and she climbs up like this telephone pole.
Yes.
Like, yeah. That's an awesome scene. I really love it.
Yeah.
It has ultimately zero impact on anything that happens because she just keeps flashing back to the car. Like, and I don't know, because it's supernatural. So it ultimately ends up like they crash the car and eventually, you know, emergency services gets there and her driver dies. Like,
yeah.
So I don't know. Was this all in her head too? Like,
I don't know. My notes near the end of this. Okay, no idea what happens at the end. It was a ghost saving her. She gets to the gas station, and gets help. That's my last. Like,
oh right, I totally forgot. She does. She walks to the gas station. At the end, the gas station that they stop at, where you know she gets locked in there. I totally forgot about that. I thought they just showed up because the last scene I remember is her sitting in the back of an ambulance at the where the car is crashed.
Also, weird thing I think we kind of brushed over is like every time the cop like attacks them, they like hit the cop and his face goes all weird, and then they just wake up back in the car. Like, what? I don't understand
and,
that.
And if they touch anything, if they touch any of these shades or you know. Ghost people, like it causes like their skin to freeze. So like she touches one and it like burns the coldness burns through her glove. So she like gets like a small freezer burn on her hand. But then when the cop attacks her, the guy saves her. But he ends up like having like major freezer burn all over his hands. Like where he actually has like what would she call it, frostbite, and like they go into that. There's so many things they could have done here though without that stupid fucking ghost. Like,
yeah, I was into like the rest of the movie, honestly.
I like the premise, I like the setup. It's just, like, I found that stuff of it so dull, and like the stuff I wanted to see they never touched on, that like I was more interested in finding out where they were in Pennsylvania throughout most of this film.
I feel like if this script had another pass and you like were willing to cut like the heart of what it was supposed to be about and change it, like this could have been a better movie for sure. And what's there? I didn't like the stuff besides the ghost stuff is good enough that I was like into it. So yeah, I don't know. Like I think we probably agree on this one way more than Dead End in a way.
Yeah, I think so. It's just wasted. It's wasted potential. Like,
yeah,
they, you know, I think that Emily Blunt gives a pretty good performance. Like, I think Ashton Holmes gives a pretty good performance.
Yeah, he's good.
You didn't need the extra, you know, supernatural baggage here. It could have just been a survival story. It could have just been like a horror film against the elements. As opposed to like, well, we need to shoehorn this goofy ghost story into it.
Yeah, agreed 100%.
All right, scores, Jeff. Where are you coming in on Wind Chill?
Again, I think competently made, looks good. I like the actors in it. I liked a lot of the setup, and then I thought, once the supernatural element is introduced, it's just very vague and undercooked, and it is not as interesting as what was already happening in the movie. So I'm going to give it a 5 out of 10. It's an okay rental. Like, it's not the worst thing ever, but kind of disappointed me because I thought, like you said, had a lot of potential.
I am too going to come in at 5 out of 10 on this one. A lot of the same reasons. Like, it's just like there's potential here. It just did not hit them. And unfortunately, like, I don't know where the stupidity of the other film kind of elevated it for me. Like, this, like, just detracted from it. Like, just no. I don't know. It was a pair of stinkers this time around.
Can't all be winners. I mean, I didn't hate Windchill, but I doubt I'd watch it again.
Did anybody answer our poll? Because these are two rather obscure.
Got one vote for Windchill. So, if we can't agree here,
well, I'm assuming you're coming in on Windchill, and I'm gonna go the other way. I think I actually would Dead End just a tad bit more because it's so stupid. Windchill wins by a 2-1 margin.
Thanks, random one vote.
we didn't end up with a tie here, so.
I cannot believe you thought Dead End was, or you enjoyed Dead End more at the very least.
I think they're both like not great movies, but they're like just the stupidity of like I laughed at the dumb shit that happened in Dead End, the mental breaks, the you know, the pie eating and the picture and the shooting the husband in the leg. Like, that stuff, like, at least got a chuckle out of me, whereas, like, once the supernatural element started at Windchill, like, the film kind of lost me. Although that scene where she does climb the telephone pole is pretty great.
Yeah, yeah. I'm happy Windchill won. But ultimately, like you said, kind of a couple stinkers this time.
What do you have on tap for us? We're going to be back onto our regular schedule. So this will be for February 1st.
Okay. So for February, look, the last time I got to do one was what, November?
Yes.
And we did a pair of psychedelic horror films.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to go to the darker side of drugs. And we are going to do a pair of horror films about the horror of addiction. And we're going to do that with Brain Damage from 1988, directed by Frank Henenlotter, versus Bliss from 2019, directed by Joe Begos. Brain Damage is like on a bunch of shit. Like, you can watch it on Tubi, you can watch it on Amazon Prime, it's on Shudder, it's on The Last Drive-In. Bliss is a Shudder exclusive, so if you got Shudder, you're set for next month. Although you know, if you don't have Shudder, you can rent Bliss elsewhere. So
nice. Looking for. I have not seen either of them, so
I have seen them both, and I think a big reason we're doing this next episode is so I can show Chris Brain Damage, and or get if there's any. Listeners get them to watch Brain Damage as well. And I think it ties like thematically nice to a more recent film, Bliss, which is pretty recent. Like, it's listed as a 2019 film, but I basically consider Bliss a 2020 film. And you know, I'll just say spoilers. I like them both. I'll just leave it at that.
Well, vote on the inevitable Twitter poll that'll come up.
The Twitter poll I'll be posting probably before this episode even releases, because I want to have it ready, because we're going to be recording pretty quickly for our next episode.
So,
hopefully you vote.
The Twitter poll should still be up when this
it should be, yeah.
Posts. So go run to Twitter, vote on that. If you've seen Brain Damage or Bliss, let us know what you think is better. I'm going to watch them for the first time, and I will come back to Jeff when we record to let him know what I think.
Woohoo! Brain Damage!
Join us February 1st.